Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Casual Comics Cast. It's me, your Casual Comics host, Joe, and today I got my Marvel buddy, Mark, with me. Hey, Mark.
Greetings, everyone. Hello, Joe.
Hey, man. It's been a while since we chatted Marvel on the podcast.
It has, and I'm excited to do it today.
It's been too long.
I love this episode. Yes.
There's a lot going on in Marvel that we haven't touched on yet, and it's almost Halloween as we were talking. It's mid-October.
It's a podcast spooktacular.
my lawn is a spooktacular with how many leaves. Just in the last 2 days, I've gone from no leaves to being buried in leaves out there.
Yes, yes.
So it's 40 degrees today. It'll be 80 on Saturday. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, Midwest weather. It's great for the sinuses.
I love it. So we're gonna be covering some Halloween themed topics today. We Werewolf by Night wrapped. We haven't talked about that yet. The Marvel special presentation. We gotta talk about we did some comics this time, right? Went back to the 90s, which is an era I'm not super familiar with from comics.
It's
like that was like my kind of college years where I was like too busy spending money on other things and time on other pursuits.
It was what little money you had to buy food and you went out and didn't have time for comics. So it was gap years, right? Comic gap years.
I didn't get my studying in. Ghost Rider was one of those that came to my mind of, you know, I thought about Ghost Rider in a while, and there's a new video game called Marvel Midnight Sun. So we went back and we read I didn't realize how important this series was until after I read it. I did some more research on it. It is the Rise of the Midnight Sun.
Yes.
Which I always thought was cool. Was Midnight Suns one of those unlockable in Marvel Ultimate Alliance if you got all of the characters, or there probably weren't enough characters to unlock Midnight Suns?
It's funny you said that. I think there was one or two, I think, on there. Midnight Suns. Maybe it was the skins.
Right.
The costumes you could get with some of those people.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that there was a play on it somewhere in the video game that we're referencing. So yes.
Yeah. And then
PlayStation 2 game, right? One of our favorites that we play together.
PlayStation 2.
Wasn't it PlayStation 2?
It was. And it was the classic when we're fighting Silver Surfer. It's like my best move right now is to kill myself. Because I can't do this quick time little button pressing thing.
It was a button masher. Couldn't mash the buttons fast enough.
No.
I got guns.
I certainly could not. We should do a video game recap. Ooh, we should go through all of the Ultimate Alliances from 1 through... Did you play the last version on Nintendo Switch?
No, I did not.
I just started playing it. Just picked it up. And it's actually really good. You start as Guardians of the Galaxy.
I've heard that's good. Yeah, I don't have a Switch. My son has one, so I could definitely borrow it or commandeer it for a week.
Yeah. And then the last thing that we picked up on was I was like, what else in Marvel Unlimited is spooky? And Marvel's website recommended Black Panther from 2005. And there's a 2-issue series called Black Panther, White Light, Black Heat that we'll talk about. Yes. But before we get to that, She-Hulk just wrapped. And we did our She-Hulk podcast and you knew what a big fan I was. And then you were marginal on it.
Yes.
So what's your final verdict on She-Hulk?
I think it's good, not great for me, but when they wrapped up the episode, they just knew who they were and were very comfortable with it. And I really appreciate that. And I love the direction that Marvel took with the whole story and the theme. And so it was enjoyable.
I liked it a lot. And it's not my favorite, but it's up there. It was really good. And I think the fourth wall breaking was done really well, because that can be irritating and annoying. But like, I watched it with one of my kids, and at the end of that final episode, I'm like, that's almost literally exactly what happened in one of the John Byrne run of Sensational She-Hulk.
Yes. So
I'm going to assume if anybody who wants to see it has had the ability to see it by now. So we may have
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Right. But that ending was how much.
What'd you think, Joe?
When I was watching with my kid, because I saw it once and then we were watching it together, and then the Marvel screen pops up and she's like, hey, she thought I pressed the button
with the sound
remote.
With even the sound, it's like, like, yeah,
She thought I turned it off. I was like,
she and did. I was going to ask you. Did she think you turned it off?
Yeah. That was awesome. And then she busts in, and how great was it when she finally met Kevin?
She met Kevin. I know. The AI bot.
Did you think?
Well, it was she goes in the writer's room first. Like, that's funny.
Right.
And like, nobody talks to Kevin.
Nobody talks to them. She's like, the way you're talking about Kevin makes me a little worried for you.
Yeah.
But it was its own thing. And it I think it proves that not every, and they even say it, and they're like, not every Marvel thing has to be the same thing. It can be its own deal. I liked the way Daredevil was portrayed because it reminds me of it almost. I'm hoping that I think we talked about in the movies, my concern is it gets too heavy into the mythology and into the people feeling like if I miss a thing, it's not going to be, I'm not going to enjoy this anymore. It's nice to have a thing that can be its own thing. And it reminds me of reading the comics. When you read the comics, you didn't always have to read every one. You could have your own series you liked. And then when a character showed up in your character's comic, that character sort of had the tone. Like Ghost Rider could be a super dark, brooding hellfire character fighting the devil all the time. But if he showed up in a Spider-Man book, he was kind of not going to be that dark and brooding, or else Spider-Man was going to poke fun at it in some way. And so it was when Daredevil showed up in She-Hulk, like the Netflix series, he was so dark and then lightens him up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And it was really well done. Again, the team up should match whatever show that they're on. And it was a She-Hulk play on that. And I just, again, it was so funny just when I was thinking, like, what is going on with this ending when he turns into that Hulk and he injects himself and then Hulk shows up and right when I'm just about like, this took the wrong, they had fun with it. And she's like, hold on, this is not the ending. And I'm like, yes, I found myself rooting for the show and what it was doing. And then reading an article afterwards, is it Tatiana Maslany? I can't remember the name of the
actress. I think it's Tatiana Maslany.
And she's just like, we're catering to the haters. Like, this is what, we don't care what they think. Like, we know what show we wanted to be and what we wanted to deliver. And that's what they did. And I you got to respect that. Like, that's just great.
I swear the writers probably didn't have to write the little posts for all the intelligentsia people. They probably just went online to Twitter and just pulled off things people were actually saying about Shield.
Well, I guess, and I don't know if this is a thing, we'd have to go back and verify. I guess Hulk King.
Yeah,
I think is one of the original trolls on the show, and they actually added it later. But I'm like, they couldn't have done that. They had to have already filmed it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, it was great. I thought you'd really enjoy the finale because you and I hadn't talked since the finale, so you really enjoyed it. That's great.
I did, and I like that it doesn't have to tie into everything. And although, like, again, the meeting with Kevin where he's like, "I'll see you on the big screen," she's like, "Really?" He's like, "No."
And she's like, oh.
I mean, if She-Hulk never shows up in the movies, I won't be disappointed, as long as they can give her her own thing, which is a TV show that's a pretty good TV show.
And then they tried to bring in the Hulk. And she's like, no, we're not bringing in any other tie-ins to movies. Like, she was like, we're not doing that. That's just not what this is.
Right. Save it for the movie.
Save it for the movie. Yes, I love, they know what they were, and they didn't try to be anything different. And yeah, a couple of the episodes, I was like, I don't know if this is for me, but I did appreciate it, every single one.
Yeah,
and that I liked how they approached it. I like
the only thing I was a little disappointed in is that they shoehorned in Hulk's son Scar at the end, which fine, she's gonna be there, and maybe that's just like no continuity, never shows up again, and it's because I had guessed earlier in the series when the ship comes and gets him from Scar. And they're like, we need you. And they take him back to Scar and he's gone. I'm like, if he's going there, I know from the comics he has a son there. And my sincere hope was that he would find his son there and there'd be an episode that was the legal drama of like him owing back child support or something. I was like, this is a legal show and he's got a son that he hasn't seen for like 8 years. This kid's got to be 8 or 10 years old. And imagine the legal complications. Let's see that.
Yeah. Yeah, they did shoehorn it in. I think they still had to, I think, introduce him somewhere because I think the World War Hulk is going to happen in MCU. They had to put him somewhere. And same thing with the
the whole Wong abomination kind of thing at the end. So they're just trying to set, I think it was just enough to set up, is I guess my point. It's not like they forced it on you. It was just kind of like, here's my son's scar.
Right. Here he is.
That was it. I'm like, okay.
So overall, I give it a big thumbs up. I hope that they bring She-Hulk back in some form, and you know, maybe they have her in some of the other TV shows. I don't know that she has to be in the movies. It'd be nice if she was, but I kind of like her having her own little side deal where she can pop up now and again.
Real quick, what is your rating on a 1 to 10 of the CGI of her?
I mean, if you consider, like, I don't know, I think they do a really good job with Mark Ruffalo as Hulk. If that's like a 10, right?
Yeah, I'd
probably say, I don't know, 6.5.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say 6.5.
It's but it didn't bother me by the end. It just kind of didn't.
I agree. Yep.
And then one last, the recreation of the original Hulk title in the last episode.
I loved it.
It was
so intro awesome. Was great. It was very grainy and 80s, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. That's one of my all-time favorite intros of all the TV series, I would say.
Yeah, WandaVision
ones are great, but that one in particular was just a great throwback. It's very, it did remind me of the 80s Hulk TV show, which is what they want.
100%. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break. I love talking about She-Hulk, but we got business to get to. We got spooky business to get to.
Yes.
So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about another Marvel special presentation, Werewolf by Night.
By the hoary hosts of Hoggoth, you're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to our spooky Halloween podcast for the Casual Comics Cast. We got a lot coming up for you today. We got some Rise of the Midnight Suns, and we got some discussion of Black Panther, White Light, Black Heat. Scary. But then first, we're going to talk about the other Marvel that just hit TV. Disney Plus, Werewolf by Night, a special presentation. That was something else.
I agree. Did you like it?
Werewolf by Night was a comic series published in, I think, the 70s and 80s that I only really know about because I am the proud owner of Werewolf by Night 32, first appearance of Moon Knight. That's how I know of Werewolf by Night. I don't know if it was a big comic, but it must have been because it ran for like 60 issues, I think. So yeah. it had a pretty good run there of scary comics. I forgot that Marvel had so many. Like, they had a Tomb of Dracula, they had, I think, House of Mystery. They had some scary titles in their library there. And Werewolf by Night was one. I've only read, you know, that issue of Moon Knight to know, you know, about werewolves in the Marvel universe. So I just did not know what to expect coming into this. Did you have any expectations when you turned it on?
I only did no real expectations. I would say I watched, there was a little montage about the creators of that special presentation, and they just wanted to talk about why they did it. It was like a 5-minute mini, not even a documentary, just kind of like an extended commercial. And I was like, oh, that's kind of, now that I knew why they did it, and it was a nod to old films and what they grew up on and how sounds and anticipation of terror can be terrifying.
Yeah.
And they really wanted to lean into that and do this. And they appreciated the fact that they could, again, like we said, the She-Hulk, take something in a different direction and tell an interesting story.
Right. Make it spooky. I really like the hyper stylized version of it. I had seen the trailer, and the trailer got me really interested to see what it was going to be. So quick recap on the story. You've got the Bloodstone, which I wasn't super familiar with, but you know, you get the Darkhold, you got the Bloodstone, you got all this dark magic in the Marvel universe. You got monsters, which we all know about monsters in the Marvel U.
Demons and monsters, yep.
Because we all saw Blade. Vampires are the thing there. And that's the clan of monster hunters who come from around the globe, and the death of, is it Ulysses Bloodstone? Is that his name, Bloodstone?
I think so.
Of the family patriarch, the Bloodstones. And they're going to have a little monster hunt to see who is the next. And I didn't know much about Elsa Bloodstone either. Apparently she's a pretty big character in Marvel, but yeah, Elsa Bloodstone.
I wasn't familiar with her either. I wasn't a comic group I was super familiar with.
And I really like the way they ratcheted up tension, introduced the characters in kind of a natural way, and then just the really stylized black and white, and then the use of, like you said, the use of sound and the use of like quiet. There's a long stretches in there where there's no dialogue and there's just people creeping around. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. It's not what I like to watch normally. But like you said, it was 55 minutes and it was really fun and enjoyable. And the imagery of him turning and the little twists and turns in the stories, yeah, even in a short 50 minutes, again, I thought it went by really fast, which to me tells me I really enjoyed it because it didn't feel like an hour long thing. It just felt like a 20 minute fun little story that they played.
Right.
And it took different directions. You had the mysterious monster hunters. You had, you know, one of the monster hunters that wasn't a real one. And then you had the monster whose real name is Ted.
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 It's the first appearance of Man-Thing.
Man-Thing.
The MCU.
AKA Ted.
Ted.
And there was some gore in it. I mean, they actually showed somebody's skull getting sliced and limbs getting cut. And,
I think you can pull that off a little more in black and white because you don't see the blood. It's just like, like when Sam Raimi tricked you in Scarlet Witch, destroying all the androids and she comes like covered in black oil. It's not as shocking as if it's blood.
If it's blood, yes, I agree. And I liked it, Joe. I thought the twists were nice. I thought the story was well done. I liked the use of the sound. And then, you know, one of my favorites was when he was changing. They didn't show him changing. They showed a shadow in the flickering light of him changing. And that just made it scarier and more visceral.
Yeah.
And I really liked that.
It tied back to She-Hulk in a way to me because, you know, I had just watched the She-Hulk finale last week, which is where how expensive it is. And Kevin's like, can you change off screen? Because it's getting, the visual effects designers have moved on.
Friendly version of, yeah.
But like there were things that happened in there that, and maybe they were CGI, some of them, but they weren't the like expensive, I'm going to animate, like the transformation scene of a werewolf. It was better like that they did it all in shadows than trying to show you like the guy transforming, like the Hulk transformed. It was more effective. And I would like to see Marvel do more of those with more practical effects, like the opening of She-Hulk versus Savage She-Hulk, and it's like the arms ripping out like the old Hulk used to be. That's a little cheesy, but there's so much you can do that's better without CGI.
Yeah, and that was the little thing that got me interested in watching it, in addition to you just telling me to watch it and asking me. It's the creators talked about that, of that's what they appreciated, is there weren't these kind of films, didn't have a big budget, so they had to make use of other things to make it scary.
Right. I mean, when they cut off the guy's arm, it's
way scarier to not watch him transform and see flickering versions of him. And as it's kind of up against her and she's looking terrified at him as he's changing.
Right. It's the reaction to what they're seeing that draws you into it, with the little shadows and hints you get. And when the arm gets chopped off, it's very 1977 Star Wars. It's like a doll arm that's just chucked on the floor with some fake blood next to it.
In the very beginning, when Ulysses Bloodstone is talking, it's very Crypt Keeper, like, hello, welcome to my lair. And he's got these animatronic kind of arm things going on.
And am I right? Was that supposed to be just like they took his corpse and made it into an animatronic thing?
I don't know.
I think it was supposed to be not like just like they put a dummy in there. It's like the dude was dead, and then like you can see where there's a metal thing around the neck and around the wrists, where I think they actually like cut up his corpse and put the animatronic stuff into it.
Yes. Because I saw that too. I'm like, is that supposed to be obvious? I think it was.
I don't know.
Crank thing. And
I would have to ask other people, see, like how many people, I wonder, took that as like, yeah, that's the corpse, versus it's just something they put in the box.
I don't know.
But it was creepy all the way through. And I mean, there were just so many touches. Like you said, it went by quick. It's very economical. Did you know the director, Michael Giacchino? Was that name familiar to you?
Yep.
Before?
Yes.
So I have so many of his soundtracks. And I think this is the first thing he's directed.
You're right.
But you can tell like he's so tuned into the audio and the music and those cues and how that, it's almost like it felt like in some ways he was designing the visual around the music rather than the other way around.
Yeah. And it was the right dose of anticipation, a little bit of terror, you know, mysterious, but then a little humor.
Yeah.
It's the right dose of all those things. Like when he's got the little thing and he doesn't know how to turn it on and he keeps trying.
He's trying to blow up the wall.
Trying to blow up the wall and he throws it.
Swear to God, I thought the dude was going to blow himself up.
No. That's the thing. I was like, so what's going to happen here? Is he going to blow himself up? Like, what's going to go on? You don't know what's going to happen next. And that was kind of the whole point.
And I think, you know, it's one of those where if you're a Marvel super fan, you probably got more out of it than I did at the beginning. Like, of course, man thing. You go and look him up later and his real name is Ted.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. You could have, like, I put two and two together when he's like, just call him Ted. I'm like, oh, that must be Man-Thing's real name before right. He got transformed into this swamp beast. But had I, you know, again, put two and two together, Werewolf by Night, the main werewolf character's name is Jack. And that's that guy. He's like, call me Jack. And so if you had been a fan of the book Werewolf by Night, you probably would have put, you would have put that together before I did, that this, like, I didn't know. It was a surprise to me that he was a werewolf.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I did not read any of the comics. I'm not a Werewolf by Night fan, and I enjoyed the episode. So I do recommend somebody, when you're in the right mood for a fun little horror film that isn't even an hour long, it's a good story to watch, and it was enjoyable.
I went and I read up on the Werewolf by Night comics a little bit after. And I'm like, the writer of Werewolf by Night had to know what they were doing when they named their main character Jack Russell. I'm like, he's a wolfman. His name is Jack Russell. But yeah, I mean, that's bottom line for me. And I like too. I watched it with one of my kids and they were like, I liked it. They're like, what does it have to do with like everything else in like the Marvel stuff? I'm like, it doesn't. That's why I like it. It didn't have to have anything right. to do with any of the other stuff. I mean, I don't care if those characters show up in a Blade movie in the future. And I don't care if the Bloodstone.
It might be a nod, Easter egg type thing. Like if the Bloodstone, like you said, shows up or Elsa does, but I don't need it to. And that's what I love about it. I love that Marvel movies tie things in. And I also love that they take chances and have different, and they listen to their fans. Like you can't, I mean, I think early on in all the Marvel movies, they had like the gray kind of style of all the Marvel movies kind of looked the same color wise. And then they listened. And then what did they do? They did Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
It's like, we're going to completely change. We're going to do Guardians of the Galaxy. Like they listen to their fans. And I really believe that. And they get feedback and then they change things. And I think this is an example of, we want to tell some cool stories and we're not going to have a longer term goal. This is a special presentation.
Right.
And even the beginning had the little kind of fun 70s special presentation. And then you saw the little film kind of heat bubbles or whatever throughout every once in a while.
Yeah. I loved it.
So the style was just really good.
I'm definitely going to watch it again before Halloween. And I'm past the point in my life where I am really into these hardcore horror films. This was just scary enough. And I could not have been happier with the ending. Just Ted and Jack.
Ted and Jack at the end playing cards. He's playing solitaire, waiting for him to wake up. Those weird big sized cards. And then I love that, again, I didn't predict a lot, but when she's fighting that guy with the crossbow arm hand thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's going to cut his arm off and then shoot him with it, with him. I knew that was going to happen. And it did. I'm like, if it happens, it's going to be awesome. She cuts his arm off and then she shoots him with his own hand weapon with the hand still on the weapon.
That was awesome.
That was great. Good. So yes, Joe, I thank you for having me watch it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Big thumbs up on that. So with that, let's get into some comics next. We'll take a quick break and we'll have maybe we'll see if we can get Jeff to lead us into a discussion of Marvel's Midnight Suns, the 6-part miniseries from 1992, when we return.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to listen to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, everybody, we're back with our Halloween Casual Comics Cast, and we are now going to talk about Marvel's Midnight Suns, which Rise of the Midnight Suns was a 6-issue series from 1992 that I did not realize was as big of a deal. Had you heard of it, Mark, when I said, let's read this thing?
It's I remember, I actually have some Night Stalkers comics.
Yeah, really?
So I I just a couple, and I was like, why did I get these? So I vaguely remember them talking about this being a big event, but zombies and vampires and Blade and Ghost Rider just were never my thing. So I never got into it, but for some reason I must have had a little bit of a phase, because I have a couple Night Stalkers comics, so I don't know what
well, we'll get about. Into the Night Stalkers, into the, you know, the Darkhold stuff. I like, when I started reading that stuff, it was very new universe-y to me. Marvel's yes. new universe. And I was like,
yes,
I was like, I barely heard of Night Stalkers before, and Marvel, it seems like, has erased them from history since. I don't know.
I had a lot, and that's what I had, Joe. I had the like first and second episode or issues of all the new universe stuff.
Right.
It's not worth paper that it's printed on now.
So this was in the 90s, and at this time in Marvel's publishing history, they were trying to get to more crossover books. You know, they had done Secret Wars in the 80s, and they figured out, oh my gosh, people love reading these crossovers. And they got to this phase in their publishing, as I understand it, where they were like, if it doesn't tie together in some way across books, it's just not worth doing. It doesn't sell enough books. These books came out right around the same time as McFarlane took over Spider-Man, and Chris Claremont's running X-Men. And, you know, there's four Spider-Man titles. They're all crossing over each other all the time. There's 12 X-Men titles are all crossing over. So, like, the standalone thing is not where we want to be as Marvel. You're in 1992, where, you know, dark and that kind of thing sells. Image Comics is popping up, making everything darker and grittier. Everybody's got leather coats on and big shoulder pads. And Todd McFarlane's drawing pouches everywhere he can. And that was like, people were like, Ghost Rider's a property that is just like ripe for the taking. It's got all of this dark elements to it, but it doesn't cross over. And so Marvel Rise of the Midnight Suns was intended to create several titles that would cross over with each other and tell a larger story. And what this introduces is something that didn't exist before for Ghost Rider, which was a narrative villain arc that could cross that kind of stuff in the character of Lilith. Mm-hmm. And it's this consistent threat that we can now be like, oh, this is a villain in a lot of different books, and we can bring it in. So that's where Marvel is when they launched this. And the first issue of this is a Ghost Rider book, right? This is Ghost Rider number 28, I believe. Does that sound right? Sounds right.
Yes.
It's right enough for us. Kicks off with Ghost Rider, of course, just busting in, wanting vengeance. He's yes. the spirit of vengeance. That's Ghost Rider's gig, right?
That is his thing. That's spirit a shtick
of vengeance. And immediately I was thrown, because I'm like, oh, Danny Ketch. I forgot Danny Ketch was a thing. Like, Johnny Blaze has always been Ghost Rider to me.
Yes.
Are you in the know of all the different spirits of vengeance that existed over time?
I am not. That is not your territory to me. So you're going to have to aid our family.
Yeah, so Ghost Rider is the spirit of vengeance. And that spirit of vengeance can possess different human hosts. Johnny Blaze is the one that we're all familiar with. Johnny Blaze is the Nick Cage version of Ghost Rider from the movies. But Danny Ketch came after Johnny Blaze, and I'm not exactly sure why. But I'm pretty sure, you know, having read these books and knowing a little bit of what I know, it's like Johnny Blaze is like, man, this whole thing of being the spirit of vengeance is kind of sucks. I just want to settle down and own a carnival and have a family.
Yes. Because who wouldn't have that retirement plan in place?
Well, I mean, he started as a stuntman, jumping yep. stuff. So carny life is the life for him.
That's right.
But so immediately I'm like, oh yeah, Danny Ketch is a thing. I forgot that there's other Ghost Riders. Because Ghost Rider is like knocking heads, looking for vengeance for somebody who's been killed. And he immediately gets a shotgun put to his head by a very Brian Bosworth looking Johnny Blaze.
Brian Bosworth, that's an accurate 90s thing.
He's got his trench coat and his mullet and his sunglasses, and he's ready to blow off Ghost Rider's head with a shotgun that is apparently shoots hellfire, but he's still wearing the same leather jacket he used to wear when he used Ghost Rider, which is cool. I mean, what do you think of Ghost Rider's new bike in this one too? He doesn't have like the same motorcycle he used to have. He has a pretty wicked looking motorcycle with like a shield kind of thing on front. It's not just like,
yeah, that was pretty cool. I was gonna ask you, because you might know more than this, I wrote down that it had a very, so I'll just call it 90s style, gritty, a lot of guns and violence, and gore. Was this at all in response to what was going on with DC's Batman also at the time? Maybe this was in response to, like you were saying, the other comics just getting more violent. Because
I feel
it's
like
a very violent series.
It is. And Batman, I guess, is like in 1989 when that started to get more dark and gritty. I felt more like reading this, it was a reaction to like Todd McFarlane's Spawn. Like Spawn and Savage Dragon and those kind of comics. Image had come out as a publisher, and Image was going to be like all giant muscles, all guns blazing all the time, more violent than other comics had been, with a lot of anti-heroes. And you're right. Batman was turning into an anti-hero at that time. And
they were really creating pretty dark storylines, right? Because isn't the 90s, was the Killing Joke in the 90s? And I don't know.
Killing Joke was later in the 90s. You've got Punisher around this time, though, too, becoming like super popular.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I was just really a bit shocked, like looking at this now, like how violent
it was. And there's a lot more occult stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with this character. So, you know, long story, I mean, it is very light on a plot in this particular book. It's just like Johnny Blaze meeting Ghost Rider and he's having strange visions. Danny Ketch is Ghost Rider's host, but has been mortally wounded in a way that if Ghost Rider turns back into Danny Ketch, he's going to die.
Yeah.
So Danny Ketch's spirit is like floating between worlds.
Yep. And they reference, I didn't read them, but they reference previous Ghost Rider. Like this happened a few issues ago,
right?
Is what they were saying. This his throat was torn out or something like that, and if he turned back, he would die.
Yeah, there's some really bad guy called Blackout they keep talking about. Am I right?
Yeah,
Blackout.
I think so.
And
not Meat Market.
Meat Market. There's a lot of 90s like giving people nicknames. Like, but this guy Blackout. Apparently, he becomes a Ghost Rider nemesis for a long time, and he's the one who mortally wounds Danny Ketch. He doesn't, I think, show up in this particular series, but then he shows up again afterwards, apparently. But
they do introduce, right? It's a setup, one of six, so it's a setup, and then they talk up. That's when they introduce Lilith, the Demon Queen, who is going to be reborn because the interdimensional walls are thinning,
right?
Because of all the mystic occult magic happening, apparently.
Yeah, there's they go hide out from the, I guess they're hiding out from the cops. They go to a graveyard, and then there's that weird gravedigger dude who just keeps spitting all the time. It's like Patootie. It's like Wolverine's got snicked, you know, Spidey's got Marvel's flip. Got
Thwip.
Nightcrawler's got Bamf.
Bamf. And he's got Patootie.
But it's a lot of hellfire, a lot of blazing to just get to the point where you see that Ghost Rider is having these terrible visions of the future that is going to be Lilith, who is the ancient mother of demons. She's returning to Earth.
Yes.
And that's kind of that. Anything else really happened in this particular issue that's of note? I guess you see Johnny Blaze get his new motorcycles, and now they both have a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it's kind of
just a setup book, like you said.
Yeah. He's like, you're alive. Oh, and then the reveal at the end is Doctor Strange is somehow keeping tabs on all of this.
Yes,
the entire time.
He's introduced at the very end, kind of like, "Hey, we've got an A-lister in here, so keep a watch."
Yeah, let's keep Doctor Strange over here. The story continues in Ghost Rider / Blaze Spirits of Vengeance #1, where Blaze and Ghost Rider are now like we're gonna do this thing. We got to get out here and stop Lilith from coming back, and they go to where, Greenland? Is that where they wind up going?
Arctic Circle,
somewhere.
Greenland? One of the, yeah.
They're somewhere, and there's this giant Leviathan type thing that is has surfaced, and her and her demons like pop out of it. It's really gross.
A lot of gore, a lot of, I wrote disturbing images.
That's true. There is.
Throughout all the books.
Yeah, it was. When we get to the end, we'll talk about like this is very interesting because it's not the kind of comics I grew up with.
Yep.
At this point, this is where you get introduced to, you know, Johnny Blaze and his carny friends and his wife and his kid. And this is sort of Rise of the Bad Guys. There's this other dude, Creed, that I don't get Creed where he came from. He's got some weird, like, cross-shaped mask on, and his hair sticks out like a clown at the top and at the sides. It's a very weird dude.
Yes.
But yeah, they're in Greenland. Lilith gets out of this prison. She's been imprisoned inside this like giant creature, this Leviathan, and she like tears her way out.
Yes.
And everything. I were you clear on like how she was imprisoned, other than she's imprisoned in this beast, and like you said, somehow the mystical realms, the walls between them are breaking down, and they're weak enough that she can free herself. And then she starts out looking for her kids. The Lilin
are Lilin.
Lilin, the offspring of Lilith. Yes. And the two that she meets are Pilgrim and Creed, not Creed from The Office. So it would have been cool if it was Creed from The Office. But it wasn't him. And then, yeah, then she finds Blackout, and it kind of turns out Doctor Strange has been watching everything behind the scene, right? This is where you get like a little bit of Doctor Strange in each issue in some way.
Yep.
That it's like, it almost feels like we got to keep teasing that he's here. And it just makes you start being like, but why isn't Doctor Strange doing anything about this? It's just like so much murder.
Right. And they explain it. They say that he
can't, because it'll help further erode. It's what she wants, basically, what Lilith wants. It'll further erode the fabric, the walls of reality dimensions.
Right. It's like they're both so powerful of sorcerers that if he were to confront her directly,
yes,
that it would only help her by weakening the walls between dimensions because of the unleashing of all that power.
So she's like goading him to do it. He's like, I know what you're up to. I'm not going to do that.
Not doing that.
Doesn't work on me, witch.
Doesn't work on me, witch. That's right.
There is a really gross page in this book, though, where it's like, I think it's Creed, the dude who looks like he's wearing crucifixes or crosses everywhere. And like Johnny Blaze uses his gun that shoots hellfire to like blow the guy apart piece by piece, then blows his head off. And what I mean blows his head off, it's like not like a shotgun would like explode someone's head. It's like his head gets detached from his body and flies off. And then he's still talking to him, though. He's like, oh, thanks for doing this. That's great. I'm glad, like, he's because he feels like he's gonna be at peace now, and then the demons come and get him. They're like, nah, we'll just put you back together, don't worry about it.
There are, Joe, there are disturbing,
and then like at the end of that
full page images in every single one of these six issues, which I think was completely intentional.
Yeah, this comic, I mean, it's still well revered and well loved by people.
I can see why, like, it's, they're disturbing, but I mean, they're probably iconic to the right audience.
Right. It's very much so captured in like this 90s, just like a fly in amber, to where this book closes with like Johnny Blaze, like, who's just blown somebody completely apart limb from limb, looking over a Ghost Rider who has got a demon with his skull on fire. And he's like, we're heading back to the Big Apple. I'm sure the cops have forgotten about us there. Not.
That's about as 90s as you can get.
Oh, like, guys, stop with the knot.
Stop with the Wayne's World references.
Yeah, next thing you know, it'll be Morbius going, swing.
Swing, psych.
So those books are the setup of this. Then we'll get really into the meat of it. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll do Morbius, the Living Vampire, and then finish out The Rise of the Midnight Suns.
Great Caesar's Ghost! You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, where we're talking about Rise of the Midnight Suns from 1992 from Marvel Comics. We had just wrapped up the first two issues, and the third issue in this series is Morbius Living Vampire number one. I haven't seen the Morbius movie. I don't know much about Morbius. I don't know. How much did you know about Morbius before?
I know a bit about him just because I'm a Spider-Man fan. So he'd have some run-ins with Spidey. So I always viewed him as a villain, and I really didn't know much of his, I mean, other than his origin and stuff, I really didn't follow Morbius. So whenever he showed up, I wasn't a big fan. Again, vampires and zombies weren't really my thing.
Yeah. Kind of get through it, people. But with Morbius,
I'm probably never going to see it.
Michael saw it. She said, not worth it, which I could have told her. But anyway, so this is a continuation. Like, the first two books are just kind of set up Lilith is coming. She's trying to free her children, the Lilin, for nefarious purposes, as demons do. In Morbius number one, Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze get to New York City where the police aren't looking for them. Not. and they wind up getting pointed in the direction of Martine Bancroft, who is Morbius's fiance. And they kind of recap Morbius and who he is and his power. Like, this becomes just a very much of, if you're following the story, we're going to tell you who Morbius is, so you might like to read the rest of this Morbius series.
It's, yes,
like, quick recap of his
origin. Part of the tie-in. Yes, it's a, they have to weave in. If you don't know who Morbius is, you don't need to know. Like, they tell you in the comic, this one comic. Yeah,
right. Here's who he is. He's the living vampire. He got his powers this way. And why should Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze not kill him as the spirits of vengeance? Is because he has dedicated himself to only drinking the blood of the guilty. He's like, listen, you're the spirit of vengeance. I'm only going to drink the blood of super bad guys. So we're actually on the same side here.
Yes.
Bingo, bango, bongo. One of the demons comes in. There's a whole plot about Morbius trying to get a cure. He's always trying to get a cure. That's his gig. He's always trying to get a cure for his vampirism. They think they finally found one. And it's secretly the dude's trying to kill him. It's a fake cure that's going to kill him. But then it double... A demon comes in and puts the demon blood in it, because demon blood also kills you, and the double killing undoes the killing and actually cures him temporarily. Somehow, right? He temporarily is not living.
No, it augments his power. I thought it didn't cure him. I thought it doubled down on his vampirism.
No, it was like it converted him back, but for like 10 minutes, and then again, and it's like, they're like, oh, there's something here. There's, now I got to have this. Because then if I can analyze this, maybe I can find the permanent cure. He's always like this far away from the permanent cure. And then, am I right?
I thought it augmented him, but maybe, well, I'm misremembering it. Because he's like, this was green and now it's purple. No matter. I'll just take it anyway.
Right, I'll just shoot it into my body. You. And then his fiance sort of gets like brutally murdered.
Yes. It's really disturbing. Like, what the heck?
It's like, all right. And then that happened. And then. Read in next time for Morbius number two.
And I had on there, my color commentary was, they actually tease Spider-Man at the end, and then they actually say he's not in issue two, he's actually going to show up at issue three. So they really want you to keep reading Morbius is the whole point.
Read the next one. If you don't like that one, after that, Spider-Man, I promise.
Spider-Man, he gets right.
Clear. It's like a birthday party where the clown hasn't showed up yet. Don't worry, kids. One more piece of cake, then he'll be here. We jump ahead then to Darkhold, pages from the Book of Sin number one, which can't have been the full title of the book constantly. It had to just be Darkhold at some point, I would hope. And I like the way that they describe it here in the description. It says the writer basically takes a break from the explosive action from the previous issues to introduce Darkhold Redeemers. Like, oh, the explosive action. Because they're kind of right now. This book is not action. This book is much more just horror.
Yes.
And
100%. Yes.
The conceit of this Darkhold group, the Guardians of the Darkhold, who are Victoria Montesi, Louise Hastings, and Sam Buchanan. It's just solid names. Don't worry about who they are. They like the character designs between some of them, they could just be interchangeable. Like, they have no distinguishing features.
No.
But the whole purpose of this issue is to introduce them. And this is a group that the Darkhold, which we all know from Scarlet Witch, Multiverse of Madness, is the Book of Evil. And apparently there's pages that are floating around. It seems like Doctor Strange has the Darkhold, but there's pages that are around. And so now they're going to have to be globetrotting people to try and find these pages that are causing evil things to happen.
Right, right. And my color commentary from this is peak disturbing images with the worm guy.
Worm guy.
I'm like, this is, people that come up with this stuff are way weirder and smarter than me, because that was the weirdest, one of the weirdest villains, is he's made up of all these worms, and then they talk about basically the sins of he was like a womanizer or something, and he wanted to live forever, and it's kind of one of those be careful what you wish for things. So there's a cautionary tale kind of embedded in this book. And the worm guy apparently can't die unless you kill all of the worms, and
otherwise, so they'll regenerate.
Otherwise any one part of them will regenerate. So they they take some of the worms and put it in a jar. And
then the jar, it forms his head in the jar.
Head in there. And they're like, we're going to kill you. And he's like, no, you can't kill me.
The other worms are out there somewhere.
And then at the end, what do birds like to eat? A flock of birds gets summoned to eat all of his worms.
It was clever. It was interesting. I'll give you that.
And then at the end, one little worm's getting away and they don't see me. Squished the worm and then he's done. But worm guy was gross. There were some gross, disturbing images. Again, perfect theme, Joe, to Halloween.
Yeah, it was spooky. It was creepy. And yes, like this was one too. You could have read the book and not read any of the other ones. This is a perfect standalone story that really just slaps the label Rise of the Midnight Suns on it so you'll read it and be part of this crossover series. Next in the series is Night Stalkers number one, which I had never heard of, but it sounds like you owned issues of.
I think I did, yeah. And now we're reading this one. This, again, disturbing images. I mean, a man being hung. Like a skin of faces from human skin. It was just weird.
That was weird. So maybe you can tell me, can you name the three Night Stalkers, their names?
I cannot.
There's Blade. Then there's Hannibal King.
Yes. And
Frank Drake.
There you go. I keep getting confused with Frank Castle.
Frank Castle.
But it's Frank Drake. You're right. Yes.
And Hannibal King and Frank Drake are both in some way related to vampires. I believe that Hannibal King was turned into a vampire by Deacon Frost. And Frank Drake is a descendant of Dracula. And Blade, if I got to tell you who Blade is, Blade's the Daywalker. And here comes Ghost Rider. And they're like, hey, we need your help. But not really. And so
it's classic, like, comic book storylines.
Yeah, and it's like the Night Stalkers are going to capture and kill Ghost Rider, and then they realize them capturing and killing Ghost Rider was them just being manipulated by the demons, and they realize it because one of the demons is invisible and has been watching everything, and then he's like, hey, there he is. He's not invisible. He's like, oh, they found me out. And he runs away. And they're like, oh, we were being manipulated by demons. I guess we can be friends. But there's still the threat at the end. They're like, when this is over, I'm still going to kill you.
Right. Look, it's still hovering.
All right, guys, you're not really getting along. And the whole thing, and in each of these issues, there's just a couple pages about Lilith just still gathering her forces. And then, like you said, in this one, it is, they present like human skins that are stitched together that have all of the 9 different characters that you've been introduced to so far.
Yes.
Say that we need all 9.
Foreshadowing.
We need all 9. The whole thing wraps up in Ghost Rider number 31, which is weird because it started in Ghost Rider 28. So I don't know what happened in 29 and 30, but they weren't part of this story.
Yes.
So then is like, oh, Dr. Strange shows up and gives them the whole back scoop. And it's like, there's got to be 9 of you. And
we need all 9 to defeat Lilith. I knew that all along, but I couldn't get involved, but I could pull strings from behind. Puppet Master.
But nothing. I mean, I just read this book this morning and I immediately don't remember how they defeated her for sure. Other than mystical stuff happens.
There you go. They are like, what if we put her in her own portal?
Right. She like rips a portal in her own chest and she pulls out Danny Ketch's spirit.
That's the thing. So that's they Danny Ketch all along these storylines, to your point. They're like, we gotta save him. He's still kind of entrapped in the death realm, and we need to kind of figure out a way to keep him alive. So that's the underlying theme. But yeah, he brings out his spirit and then turns him into a weird extra son, extra Lillin.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need to defeat him, but not kill him because his spirit is in there. Yeah, it was a really confusing. I think you summed it up well. Mystical stuff happens. Like, that's how they defeat.
It was really just, it happened. Like, her portal is in her abdomen, and they stick her own head. Like, she bend her, like, stick your head in here. No.
Yes.
You're in your own portal. How do you like them apples?
Very confusing.
And the book sort of ends with they defeat Lilith. They like defeat her and they're all like, ah, well, that whole thing's over. And then they leave. And then she's just like, no, you didn't really defeat me. I'm just here still.
Yeah, right. I'm like, so wait a minute.
Like, what? They didn't stop and
what
look.
What really happened? there was no, there were no high stakes, Joe. It just never really felt to me like there was something we were winning against. And then they even said it at the end, because she's like, you didn't really defeat me. And you know, Strange, Dr. Strange, someday you're going to have to come at me.
Right. It all starts with her, like, it all ends with her eating somebody again and saying, ha, now what I'm going to do is gather my strength to defeat these Midnight Suns. It's like,
what were you doing before?
I don't know. But it market? All meat market. I found it. I mean, there is a character named Meat Market, which is bizarre. I found it overall like an interesting read, especially because I have, you know, we have Marvel Unlimited now and don't have to pay for these books other than the subscription fee. I don't know. Did you find it worth reading?
Not compared to the other things that we've read on this podcast. And but I would say I could see how it has a kind of a cult following. It's the imagery is unlike any series that I've ever read. I mean, even the Werewolf by Night stuff, which is a bit gory, this was gory and disturbing, and it just started out with a ton of violence, which I didn't really appreciate that much, but I get, we talked about earlier why that was important. But the overall series, the story wasn't super strong, the stakes didn't seem super high, but I would say definitely, even with the 90s style and vibe, the imagery was really disturbing and interesting. So it was entertaining.
Yeah.
To a degree.
It's an interesting relic of its time. And if I put myself in my shoes of, you know, being when I used to read comics, you know, a lot as a teenage boy, I might've gotten interested enough to say, you know what, I'm going to pick up. I think if I was going to read one, it probably would have been that Darkhold book, just because it was like really out there and weird and different. Yeah. And it wasn't trying to be like a superhero book with the occult in it. It was just like its own thing.
Yeah.
But none of those series, I don't think, lasted very long. Ghost Rider's been around forever. Ghost Rider will never go away. Blade's still around. I don't think the Night Stalkers are a thing anymore. Somebody, one of the things I read mentioned that maybe Blade 3, the movie with Wesley Snipes, has a nod to some of those younger characters, like Ryan Reynolds, I think, is Hannibal King or one of those. And they're like, yeah, they just kind of took the name and slapped it on one of those characters to be a nod to Night Stalkers. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I'll go back and read any of those. It does make me mildly interested to check out the video game that's coming up, though, Midnight Suns, because you could do some really cool stuff with those, that same crew of characters, you know, in a dark video game. But I don't know. I thought it was, I'm glad I read it for the spooky season for Halloween. Yes. Coming up. Wasn't a waste of time, but I wouldn't say, you know, I think if you listen this far, you know whether it's for you or not.
That's right.
So let's take a quick break and come back and talk about the other books we read, which is only a 2-issue series, Black Panther, White Light, Black Heat.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You know the rules. We're not done until one of us can't get up.
All right, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. Here in our last segment, we're going to talk about a Black Panther series that we thought would be appropriate for Halloween with the new Black Panther movie coming up. This is from 2005 series of Black Panther. It's issues 12 and 13, White Light, Black Heat. And, you know, to hit the plot right away, it's really interesting tone of the book. It's like it takes place in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And apparently Black Panther at this moment in time is searching for a queen. It's flying around the world. I don't know. It's like a Coming to America situation or something for Black Panther.
Yeah. And a lot of warlords and tyrants want there to be his bride to be. And he ends up fighting some of them, not in this series, but that's what happens in the story.
Right. But this one, you get all the elements that are going to bring it together. You're going to get Hurricane Katrina happens in New Orleans, so you're going to get Brother Voodoo showing up. You're going to get vampires in the Big Easy. So Blade's there, obviously. And Black Panther ends up showing up. And he's there, remind me, is he there for humanitarian reasons because he happens to be in the area?
Yeah.
Why does he make a pit stop?
And that's one thing that I always liked about Marvel, just a quick sidebar, but it's related to this story, because when I started reading it, and they went right into the, like people going around town of the flooded city of New Orleans and saving people. That's what I always appreciated about Marvel, is they would create awareness around big tragedies like that. and make it relevant. And I really appreciate that Marvel would do that to help people say, like, this is a real problem. And so we're going to create a whole story around it. So I appreciated that. But yeah, it was, he wanted to help. It was a humanitarian mission, Joe. So they wanted to actually go and help save people, but they get wrapped up in brother voodoo
and
the
things happening with vampires taking over the city.
The book kind of kicks off with Blade and brother voodoo.
It does.
Like, just taking out vampires. And at this point in Tim 2, Luke Cage is like cruising around with
yes. Because they're all helping out New Orleans and because of the tragedy that happened there.
It seems like maybe Luke was with him before that for some reason, because they talk about him being in a scrap and now wearing Wakandan gear. And then they show up. It's like they're going down. Monica Rambeau shows up because she's also a local hero there. And the government. The local government, you know, like it's that corrupt government in Louisiana. They're in with the vampire somehow. And I do appreciate, like you said, that Marvel tries to talk about some of the issues, because Katrina, you know, one way or another, there were political things that led to, you know, what happened, and both leading up to it as well as the aftermath. So they're willing to at least have that discussion of where blame might be. One of my favorite cameos in Marvel Comics happens here. When Karl Malone shows up.
Did you get that?
Was Karl Malone?
Expect that, no.
Oh. He's like, Karl Malone shows up with his construction crew. Like, look here, Mr. Basketball Star. Just because you're a big deal in Utah doesn't mean you can show up here. It's like Karl Malone. Well, Karl Malone was well known for being like in the basketball off season for the Utah Jazz, he would drive long haul trucks cross country. That was like his, like he just liked to do it. And so when he retired, he started his own construction company, and he just likes driving big trucks and stuff. So I wonder if that actually really happened, if he really did show up. And it wouldn't surprise me if he showed up in New Orleans.
Maybe that was the nod, or because they didn't have a basketball team then. And New Orleans used to have one. They didn't in 2005, but they had the New Orleans Jazz. They moved to Utah, so maybe there was a whole nod there.
Yeah. So this is all in the aftermath of Katrina, with the cleanup happening, and Black Panther and Luke Cage show up to help with the cleanup. And of course, in the sewers, then they run into the vampires, they run into Blade and Brother Voodoo. And then it's just going to be like, okay. And it moved at a good pace, because then they get into the next issue where it's like, okay, well, now let's all of us team up and just go kill vampires together, which was,
yes,
I thought, pretty awesome.
It was a really fun short series. And again, it's your point when you asked Marvel for Halloween storylines, like, this is it. It's got everything.
Yeah,
and I really liked being reminded of the, you know, we got to be reminded sometimes of these tragedies and that you do the right thing and try to help people out.
Yeah.
And there's some good one-liners in there too, like you said, some cameos and some one-liners about when he talks to Monica Rambeau about, you got the power of the sun, you're just using it as a six shooter, you're a goddess, act like it.
Right, and then somebody on the side is like, man, he's laying the lines down thick on her, man. He's trying to get with her.
Sometimes they're just so, their deadpan humor is a bit sexist, but pretty good.
Yeah. I also liked, you know, to see how other Marvel characters might fight vampires too, which is kind of cool, because you know how Blade is going to handle it, and you kind of know how Brother Voodoo is going to be. But to see how Black Panther is like, all right, I'm going to get my armor here. He's got, right, this armor has been consecrated in the name of the Panther God. This blade is the weapon of the Roman Catholic Church. He's got every weapon you could want if you were Black Panther to fight a vampire. And it's just like hanging out there. He's like, I got it on my ship. Don't worry. Black Panther is prepared. That dude's awesome. He's prepared for everything.
He is. He's like the Batman of Marvel. He's got everything going on.
He is. So overall, yep. I mean, this is a quick read. I mean, like, I read both of these in like 15 minutes.
And, yes,
you know, if you've got Marvel Unlimited and you want to check out something, it's a 2005 series of Black Panther, issues number 12 and 13, and it's a I'm not a huge vampire comic fan, but it was kind of cool to see these characters come together for the first time. And from what I understand from this writer, Reginald Hudlin, his series is he kind of took Black Panther and took him into a lot of different genres in a row. And I was like, here's a couple fantasy, here's a couple sci-fi, here's a couple horror. And he really, like, this was an era of Black Panther that a lot of people liked. And I can see why, if he's able to skip genres that seamlessly.
Yep. And it was, you're right. It was a quick, fun read.
So with that, that's what we got for comics this week. Leading into
Spooktacular, Joe.
Next up, though, speaking of Black Panther, is Black Panther Wakanda Forever coming up in about 4 weeks. Any thoughts before we leave on what you've seen so far on Wakanda Forever, Mark?
I wish I wasn't spoiled by the Target commercials of Siri building a Iron Man costume, but it's really cool that they're doing that. So I suppose, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how they portray Namor. I think it's going to be a little tearjerker and on how they nod to Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good movie, and I love the first one. Ryan Coogler did a fantastic job, so I'm looking forward to seeing him direct this one as well.
I'm hearing, what is the runtime on this one, like 2 hours 30 minutes?
Oh wow, right. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. It seems
that, like, that makes sense. They got a lot to talk about.
They had a lot to cover. Introduction of Atlantis. You know, I think they gave, they gave away a lot in some of the trailers, but
they did. It's like, you don't need to do that. People are going to go watch it, but.
There's a Black Panther movie coming out. You better show me a really good trailer. Otherwise I'm not going.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, I don't think you need to do that, but especially this one. I mean, it was so popular, and hit the character dying. It's definitely sad, and there's going to be a sad element there.
Yeah. I'm
sure it'll be probably the first act that they'll address it, and it'll be super sad. But I'm looking forward to it.
You've always got Chadwick Boseman's performance in What If. That is so awesome.
That was eerie and awesome. And yes, I agree.
What If Black Panther led the Guardians of the Galaxy. I loved it. All right, well, we're going to take one last quick break. I'm going to have Jeff tell you about some comic books to check out this week, and then we will wrap up when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. What a revolting development that is.
And now, it's time for the Tremendous Trio of Terror, three new comics that we recommend for all of our loyal listeners. First, Dead Mall, number one, Dark Horse Comics. From the critically acclaimed author of Clown in a Cornfield comes this new tale of terror. The Penn Mills Galleria is about to be demolished. 5 teens sneak into the mall to take a last look around before it's gone. But while Penn Mills has been closed for years, the mall is far from abandoned. A night of exploration becomes a shopping spree from hell. The teens must contend with the sprawling, transformative cosmic horror of Penn Mills, or be trapped forever within the Dead Mall. Then, Army of Darkness vs. Reanimator, Necronomicon Rising, number 4, Dynamite Entertainment. When an archaeological dig unveils an important element from the world of the Army of Darkness, it ends up in the absolute worst hands of all, Dr. Herbert West. As West tinkers in God's domain, our reluctant hero is once more drawn within the sphere of destiny as he faces a triple threat of danger. This issue, West, plus Ash, plus Ash? Where is it all going? Nowhere good if the Necronomicon has its way. Finally, Moon Knight Annual Number 1, Marvel Comics, Werewolf by Moon Knight. In the Darkhold, there's a prophecy of how a god might die. Jack Russell, more familiar with that cursed tome than most, would like very much to kill a god and save his people, the people bound in servitude to the moon. But to fulfill that prophecy requires the blood of the Fist of Khonshu, and Moon Knight doesn't bleed easily. And that's your Casual Comics Cast Tremendous Trio of Terror for this episode. Pick them up wherever fine comic books are sold today.
All right, Jeff, thanks for those comics. Remember, grab those at your local retailer if you get a chance. Support your local comic book shop. Those, as well as many other comics, are available now, including Marvel's having a reading event, the Halloween, was it Trick or Read? So Ooh. Keep your eyes out that Marvel is taking a handful of some of their best-selling books and making them free in comic shops in the month of October. So the Trick or Read event, you know, to inspire reading. I think a lot of them are more kid-friendly titles like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which does have its own series coming out soon. Did you see the trailer for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur?
I did not.
It looks like it'll be fun. It's probably that what I think Marvel's doing a good job of, like we talked about She-Hulk, Werewolf by Night, making things their own thing. This is an animated series, probably pitched to the tween crowd, but should be a lot of fun. So check out your local comic book shop, support them, and ask them when they're going to have those free comics. I'm sure they love people calling them. They're like, when are the free comics showing up? Google it. People, Google it. You'll figure it out.
It gets people in the stores, so they should be welcoming and very, very encouraging to have people do that.
Yeah, so we're going to try and squeeze in one last podcast before Halloween. Jeff and I are going to try and cover Tales from the Crypt, which was a comic book before it was a TV show, by the way.
So, you know that, Joe.
So, but thanks for joining me today on this special scary Halloween edition, Mark. Hope you enjoyed reading these books as much as I did. And we will be back soon. Cheers, everybody.
See ya.
All right, see, we did that all in a half.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, @CasualComicsGuy. At our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com. Or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.